Remember when computers could generally do just one thing at a time? Remember when phones were just used to call people? As our machines have improved, we have changed our own behavior. Multitasking has been part of the language for a while and part of our habits for even longer. But are we any good at doing more than one thing at a time? Our next guest, armed with research, says no. Devorah Zack is the author of the book Singletasking. Devorah is the CEO of Only Connect Consulting, which helps shape executives and other leaders at all kinds of organizations. She's written two other books, gotta love these titles, Networking for People Who Hate Networking and Managing for People Who Hate Managing. Devorah, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's my pleasure.
Urging people to not multitask goes totally against the grain of the times, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's a cutting-edge idea, and it's also a very old idea. It's how our brains are created, is to single task.
Is this a lesson you learned yourself the hard way?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Tell us.
I did. I also am a leadership development consultant, and I noticed it in my clients that they were getting more and more overwhelmed. And the more time-saving devices that we've gotten, the less time we seem to have. And there's a big disconnect that I decided to investigate.
Why do you suppose that is, that while we have all these so-called labor-saving devices, we seem to have more labor?
Because we are living in a world that expects us to constantly be available, and also we are bombarded with information, so we are living with this constant feeling of being overwhelmed and think that we have to do more than one thing at a time to keep up.
Well, all right, so I noticed recently, I'd never heard the term before, the whole concept of inbox zero, that apparently is an unattainable goal. But it seems to me that in the age of email, there are many more people who expect many more things of us more often during the day.
That's correct. Well, and people think that multitasking is the solution, and I like to ask them, how's it working for you so far? Is multitasking making you more sane, productive, and leading a more cohesive life, or is it causing you to just feel more and more behind? And the reality is, multitasking is a myth. It doesn't exist. It's actually impossible for our brains to do more than one thing at a time. So when we think we're multitasking, we're actually doing what neuroscientists call task switching, which means our brain is very rapidly moving back and forth between competing tasks. And get this, it makes us 40% less productive.
40%?
That's correct. So we actually are less productive in our effort to do more than one thing at a time. The way to be productive is by immersing yourself in one task at a time and focusing completely on where you are. Your body and mind should be in the same place at the same time. Focus on where you are and then move on to the next task. And you can get a lot more done in less time.
There are some things we can do together. I was starting with the walk and chew gum baseline, but then I thought about Jimi Hendrix, who could sing and play some raging guitar at the same time.
That's right. And I have a section in my book called When Multitasking Isn't Multitasking. So it's okay if you do two things at a time if one of them is an automatic function for you. And it varies from person to person what's an automatic function. So for many of us, walking and chewing gum counts, driving and talking to a friend sitting next to us counts, listening to music and running on a treadmill counts. All those things are fine. It's when the two tasks are competing for the same part of your brain. And when we do attempt to multitask, when both require conscious attention, it actually shrinks the gray matter in our brain. We're shrinking our prefrontal cortex when we attempt to multitask.
Shrinking its use or shrinking the actual physical stuff?
The actual physical stuff. Hey. We're making our brains smaller because we're overwhelming them.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It's pretty serious.
I plan to stop today.
Thank you.
So
choice.
Is it just because we're expecting too much out of the neurons up there, or cutting off blood flow, or what's? I mean, I know you're not a brain scientist, but you've done some research into this area.
That's right. I'm not a brain scientist. However, I'm fascinated by neuroscience, and I did a lot of research in writing Singletasking. And our brains can't keep up because we're wearing it out by task switching, which again is what's really happening when we think we're multitasking, and it's not what our brains are designed to do, and they start to short circuit. And just as a little extra tidbit, University of London just did a study attempting to multitask, also shrinks our IQ. Our IQ gets lower.
Really? So we're actually
a pretty compelling argument to try something new.
I'm sure there are lots of people who have disagreed with you, though, and said, oh, come on, I can do this and this at the same time, or I can listen to music and type a paper and be able to watch TV at the same time, too. I mean,
Well, again, listening to music and typing paper is fine, and that's not considered technically multitasking because it's not, they're not competing functions. However, when people say, I can do two things at a time, like I can, you know, whiz off a few emails while I'm on a conference call, when you really are honest with yourself, you're making more mistakes, you're not as productive, you think you're getting away with something, you think, oh, yeah, I'm getting all this stuff done and nobody knows because I'm on a conference call. People know. People know. People could tell that imperceptible pause, barely imperceptible pause, when they ask you a question and then it takes you a second to answer, or you ask them to repeat the question. And you're not impressing anyone with your professionalism by multitasking. People, you're really making people think you're not as competent as you truly could be if you focused on them when they talk to you.
As you said that, I was writing down the kinds of things that people tend to say when they're not successfully multitasking, which is, what? I'm sorry.
That's right. Exactly. I think the connection went down for a minute. It's we're just getting more overwhelmed. Clearly, it's not working. Now, part of the problem is people don't know how to single task. Like you're saying, oh, I'm going to start today, but it's very hard to just completely shift. So part of it is understanding that single tasking takes place inside, internally, in our brains, focusing our brain, and also externally in our environment. So it's a two-step process to single task.
Devorah Zack is our guest in the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book Single Tasking, Get More Done One Thing at a Time. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions, 800-838-3760. By phone, anywhere in the listening area. Maybe you've had some successes at multitasking or some notable failures. Either way, we'd like to hear from you. You can also email us at jx@jeffnet.org. But, you know, when we're talking about single tasking, though, I guess, you know, it's sort of like serial monogamy, I think, the way some people look at it. I mean, yes, you're doing different, or you've got different tasks open, for example. You know, I'm going to read this book and I'm going to take some notes on it. I'm going to answer some emails. But, you know, it's not really multitasking in a sense when you're doing them sequentially in little tidbits. Is your point that you need to do, the tidbits need to be not so little?
The tidbits can still be quite little, actually. It's when we're attempting to use them at the exact same time, like responding to emails while we're watching a show, like simultaneously. But if you're watching a show and then the commercials come on and you put it on mute and turn away and then do a little work for a few minutes and then go back, that's okay. And that's an important point, because single tasking doesn't mean being lethargic or unproductive or having low energy. Single tasking actually takes a lot of energy and focus, and we can be incredibly productive. And you can get a task done in 5 minutes and go on to the next task instead of trying to do a whole bunch of things for 20 minutes and really get nothing accomplished, or make a lot of errors, or end up really insulting people. Because we're pretty relentlessly disrespectful to people these days with how we treat them. So if you're deciding you're going to go to lunch for 45 minutes with someone, business or personal, that's what you're doing. You're not also checking text messages the entire time. So it's really making a choice and sticking with it. And it can be for 45 minutes, it can be for 5 minutes. It's just where you are is where you are. It's about being in the present moment.
Okay, but for a lot of workers, I'm thinking, even if the desire is there to go ahead and follow what they learn in single tasking to the letter, there are still people who are going to get back to their offices when they've spent that 45-minute lunch not answering messages, get a face full of boss saying, why didn't you respond?
That's right. And so, really, it's when you're managing a boss, and I get asked to variations on this question quite a bit, of course, as you would expect, and a boss says, what are you doing right now, or I need you to do this, then in a very respectful way, nice tone, positive nonverbals, say, okay, so here's what I have planned to do right now. You know, it's for this project that maybe I was supposed to finish by 3 o'clock today, as you know. I can stop that and move on to this other task you're asking me to do now. Which would you prefer? What do you think my priority should be right now?
I've heard that technique used. It can be very effective if it is done with a nice tone of voice.
Exactly.
And good nonverbals, as you say, yes.
It really depends on that. And because when we say, oh, our boss wants us to multitask, that they may even say that and think that. What they really want you to do is to be a great employee, to be productive, to be efficient, to be responsible, to be committed. And all those things you're going to do better if you're single tasking.
And I'm going to get into the neurological research that you cite in the book, because there are some things that I notice about myself, for example, when I'm driving and talking to somebody, either on the phone, and yes, I have the earpiece, I'm legal, or just somebody's even talking to me in the car, if there's a particularly tricky traffic maneuver coming up, I don't hear what they say.
That's right. That's right. And we used to use time in the car for a little bit of quiet self-reflection or relaxing or unwinding, listening to music. Actually, I still do that. And there have been several studies lately that find even if you just spend 15 minutes a day, which many people don't do, in just relaxing, unwinding, self-reflection, doing something non-productive, which you can do in the car if you're not on the phone or attempting to text, you are 23% more productive over the course of a month. So again, if the goal is to be productive, which it is for so many of us, you're more productive by giving yourself this downtime. And I call that time shifting. Sometimes you're working really hard and focused and active, and sometimes you're downshift your time, and you're just allowing yourself to regenerate.
How have those gains in productivity been measured?
There have been many different studies, and they measure things over the, they follow people very closely, and it depends on the study. Like, for example, Harvard University recently did a study where they measure productivity by watching how many times people switch tasks over the course of the day, and then how many of their tasks they actually got done. And they found out, first of all, that what they call heavy task switchers, people that shift what they're doing sometimes up to 500 times a day, get less done than people who task shift less often. And also, this is a great piece of research that people, I hope you really integrate this in your life, that when you don't work during lunch, when you just relax and enjoy your lunch either alone or with a friend, you get more done in the overall day than if you attempt to work through lunch. So there's a lot of upsides to single tasking.
So you spread yourself out pretty thinly, I guess I should say, so that if you're trying to work through lunch and everything, you're just, you know, you may be on the job more, but you're being less productive during that time.
Right. In business school, we call it diminishing marginal returns.
Devorah Zak is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book Single Tasking. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Thoughts, comments, questions, experiences with trying to multitask, and either failing or succeeding brilliantly, if that's what happens with you. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. I do seem to hear this more from millennials. Oh, I'm multitasking. And as digital natives, most of them, they grew up with computers and cell phones around. Are they better at it, or are we just fooling ourselves than anybody in the current human stage of evolution can be better?
There's a neuroscientist named Doug Merrill who said, everybody knows that young people are better at multitasking. The problem, everybody's wrong. And what several neuroscientists have done research on last few years is that young people think they can multitask better. They really can't. Our brains are basically the same across the board, and they just have, they're more used to having a lot of things open at the same time. But it's really become a real problem in colleges and grad school and even high school in some cases, where people are doing other things besides listening to the teacher teach or the professor teach, because they're supposedly taking notes on the computer. And it's causing a problem with retention overall. Their memories are failing at a much younger age because in order to retain things, our cognitive function diminishes when we're only giving partial attention to what the information we're taking in.
So is that a diminishing effect on both the things we're doing? For example, if, as has happened with me, I get notes from people who are typing emails while they're sitting in a class. I know they're in class because it's that time of day. Are they going to not remember the class and not remember the content of the email both?
That's right. It's just the information that's coming into their brain is not going into a higher memory function. It's just coming in a very superficial level, and it's not going to stick in the brain. So it impairs cognitive function to attempt to multitask.
Okay, now what about for parents? Because, you know, when they're child rearing, they're trying to take care of the laundry. They might be doing a little work on a laptop. They're trying to get a little time to themselves, get a cup of coffee, whatever, read a book, while they're supposed to be paying attention to the kids. I mean, this is multitasking too, isn't it?
That's right. And I work very hard as a professional, and I have three kids, and so I know what it's like. And that's something I point out in my book is that I'm just like the reader. I'm not in some surreal life where everything's taken care of for me. I don't have any stressors. Like, I totally get it. And I love the study that came out just this past year, which is that as far as being a parent, and there have been studies before this as well, but this one just came to the surface recently, that to be a great parent, it's not how much time you spend with your kid, it's how focused you are on them when you're with them. And so, and my kids know this, of course, that when we're together, when we're having a meal together, there's no electronics. We're completely engaging with each other. And a meal may only last 20 minutes, but meanwhile, that's really great quality time. And when I'm doing other things, I may not be available to them all the time. I may be on a radio interview. I may be doing work. I may be running an errand. But the point is to be where you are and wherever you're doing, or whoever you're with, giving them your full attention. And then people really won't mind that you aren't with them every second or focus on them every second, because they know when they're with you, you are truly present. And that is really a rare these days, unfortunately.
So when you hang out with friends as well, also keep the cell phone stashed?
That's right. And one thing I've had some clients tell me they've tried is if you go out to dinner with friends, everyone puts their smartphones off to the side in a pile, and the first one to touch the pile buys dinner for everyone.
That seems like a good mechanism to enforce it.
And by the way, in a professional stand situation, what I recommend is to try, if let's say you have weekly staff meetings that run about an hour every week, is to decide to test out with your team, making it a device-free zone. No electronics in the meeting. So people walk in, they put all their electronics off to, in a box or a basket or another table. Everyone gets a pad and a pen, and that's it. Except as a reward, the meeting is half as long. You say the meetings, our hour-long staff meetings are now half an hour. There's no devices for half an hour. We're engaging in this conversation together. You will be amazed how much more productive the meetings are and also what it's like to be in a conversation with people where they're making eye contact, listening, engaging. Nothing has to get repeated because someone was spacing out. So I really recommend giving that a try as well.
How often, I mean, I haven't worked for other places in 6 years, and I had another job for 24 years before that. So I mean, how often do people pull out their stuff and check other things while they're in meetings these days? I don't know what the courtesy is in the business world.
I would say it's from the beginning of the meeting until the end of the meeting. And it's supposedly because people are taking notes, so they're doing things that are related, but people are all over the place. And even if the intention is to use it for something related to the meeting, we have pop-ups all the time, auditory and visual, and people are, yes, unfortunately, devices are out and face up on tables constantly now.
Huh. But I like that idea, though. Cut the meeting time in half if you all stash your stuff away and pay attention to me now.
That's right. And when I give keynotes and seminars, I tell participants it's a cell phone free zone. I'll give you a break, you know, once every hour or so to check. You know, it's part of it. It's living in the real world. They still need to check, but the rest of the time they're away. And people really get so much more out of it and build such better rapport with each other. A lot of what I do is like interactive, so they're talking to each other, not just listening to me. And it's incredible how much stronger relationships become when you're telling the person that you're with that you're important simply by not glancing down at your phone every few seconds.
So there are big social benefits in addition to what you get from your work.
Right.
Let's take a call. We have Bill in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Devorah Zack, the author of Singletasking.
Yes, evolutionary. We are programmed by science, has checked it out, that when we are, for survival, hearing is a more priority than visual. So when we are on the cell phone, even if we are using earphones, if we're involved in something, our mind will switch to the auditory and our visual will shut down. I'm pretty sure this science has proved this.
All right, let's take it from there, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, also, you made me think of another fact about how our brain works, which is that we tend towards the novel. So if something new pops up, our energy, our focus will go towards that as opposed to what we were already working on. So if you're writing a paper or a proposal or a project on your computer and something new pops up, you'll go there because we're interested in what's new and novel. So that's another problem. But that's all very easily solved. It's simply turn off those auditory and visual dings when you're working. When you're in a meeting, don't have your computer screen up. Turn it on black. So there's ways around it. I call that building fences. And building fences means it's almost impossible to ignore a distraction once it occurs. So mitigate it before it happens. Create a winning environment for yourself. So if you know you're going into a one-on-one meeting, turn off all auditory and visual distractions before it happens, rather than trying to have superhuman strength once it happens.
Through your work, you obviously work with the top people in many organizations, and they're all, no doubt, trying to squeeze maximum output from minimum staff. So are you finding an entrenched pro-multitasking mindset?
One CEO I talked to said, oh, this is great. I love this book. I'm going to start single-tasking. I just don't want my staff to start single-tasking. And she said it tongue-in-cheek, but it is, I think, behind in some people's minds. And again, I go back to what is it you really want out of your staff and your team? And really, everything they want, they'll get much more of when people are single-tasking. Because when we single-task, we're entering a deeper brain state, we're more focused, we're deeply engaged in the task, which is impossible by definition when you're multitasking. And when we're in that state, our brain's waves actually change. They become deeper, and we become more creative, and we become more productive, and we think of more solutions we wouldn't have thought of. So we are much better employees and people and friends and when we are truly focused, which is really what single tasking comes down to.
All right, so the baby steps for people who want to start trying this right away, when they get to work in a couple of minutes, what do they do?
So the first thing is to start small. So I like the way you said baby steps. So if you're saying, oh, I'm never going to try and do two things at once again, so just put that aside. Try and do one thing at a time. Start in your car, because driving while distracted has just surpassed driving under the influence as the number one cause of traffic fatalities. So start there. That's the most important place to start. And by the way, texting while walking has quadrupled in the number of serious accidents in the last 2 years also. So if you think you can text while you walk, think again. So start with those. Once you're at work itself, then start each day 5 minutes, 5 minutes organizing your day, getting focused. So that's starting your self-reflection time, just getting focused, organizing your day. And then once you're at the office, just give yourself a half-hour block, again, about starting small. Half-hour block, you're going to be completely engaged with whatever your first task is, whether it's at a meeting, with an individual, or on your computer. I also recommend something I call cluster tasking. Cluster tasking means if you have a repetitive activity you do throughout the day and it can take over, for example, emails, reading and responding to emails, cluster-like tasks into designated time slots during the day. So maybe half an hour when you get to work, half an hour after lunch, half an hour before you go home. That's when you focus on all your emails rather than nonstop all day, and you'll be better at responding to emails, and you'll be better at everything else you do.
So you're scheduling your stuff. You're saying, I'm going to do emails now, not all the time.
Right, and you can have any similar task. Again, that's cluster tasking.
All right, a lot of fun reading the book. It's a real eye-opener in a lot of ways. The book is called Single Tasking. Devorah Zak is the author, and she's been our guest on The Exchange. Devorah, thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Great talking with you.